to and search this stuff?
YouTube.
Like Bing.com?
Well, I'm a Bing fanatic.
Ask Jeeves, you know.
Bing fanatic.
Love Bing. I get made fun of all the time for using Bing.
It's nice to see your actual picture and not the Stanley Cup thing.
Yeah, well, so I had to sign up for another Zoom account because I was doing Zoom meetings at work.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't trying to get fired for the other pick, so I signed up for a more, I won't even say professional. It was just, I think it's just like a regular, like generic pick. But I had a Zoom meeting with corporate, and I was like, man, that would be awful. Like, these people don't know who the hell I am. And then all of a sudden it's like, boom, there I am, Stanley Cup, and that's it. So yeah, I tried to nip that in the bud, but yeah. That's great. It's been a minute though, man. How you doing?
I know, good. Trying to do more shit, you know. You being off has like forced me to learn things. So I tried to get the YouTube presence going. I've been working on that.
What flavor lollipop you got there?
Cherry.
Cherry's awful.
I know.
Cherry's so trash.
It's the only one I got over there. I wish I had fucking, there's cherry or grape.
What am I gonna do? Halloween candy?
Yeah.
So how you feeling?
I'm feeling a lot better. I can walk now. I can breathe and everything. Do we ever talk about it?
No.
Do you want
to? We talked about it like via text.
Yeah.
But my favorite part, so I think I texted you like something random and you were like, oh dude, look, I'm dying or something like that. Like,
yeah.
This whole thing, right? Like, oh, I went to hell and back, you know, I saw the light. Tunnel came, and then you send me a selfie from the hospital.
Yeah.
That is clearly for sympathetic likes and gram clout. It's like, you look like death.
I know,
but damn it, if you were gonna go out, you were gonna get your last selfie in there.
A couple.
So it's like you got this nasty thing on your neck, uh-huh. Right? And you look so pale, and you even have that face of like, fuck, man, I don't know if I'm gonna make it. But you could tell that you took the picture, or you took the pic. So that's the best part, is you can tell that you still had enough strength to get that camera phone up, find the right filter, and click post, and put like a hashtag like blessed or something, some stupid hashtag, you know, happy to see another day, blessed to see another day.
Dude, I was on so much morphine. It was ridiculous. It was like the only drugs they could give me.
That's scary shit though, man.
Yeah, it was wild, man. Pulmonary embolism. You look it up on the internet, it's like, whoa, you could die really easy from that.
So, yeah, but you look at you, you're a survivor.
Yeah. Now I have blood thinners for life. I am allowed to play hockey. They said no at first, but I am allowed to play. I just gotta be careful.
Yeah, you've only been off for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I'm trying to come back for the spring, so let's see what happens. But you want to start?
Yeah, I thought we did start.
Yeah, we did start. I'm going to put this in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, sure. Let's start.
All right, let's start. All right, dude, what's new with you, dude? Yeah, what have you been doing? How many movies did you see?
I mean, since we last, I don't even remember the last time we talked because just football season started. So I've been trying to get more in because of the fact that, you know, football season and we're reaching the end of the year and my number is pretty low for what I normally do. I knew it was going to be lower this year because of COVID, but yeah, sorry. Yeah. You know, it's the problem too, is there just haven't been a lot of good movies out. So I would guess the last time that I talked to people was probably looking at my list, New Mutants maybe. Yeah, oh, I think the last one I saw was New Mutants. So so that was movie number 80, and I'm at movie number 93 now. So
was it that bad?
New Mutants. It was. I mean, I compared it to, you know, the problem with it was the ending of the movie should have been the end of the second act, and by the time you realize that, oh no, this is going to be the end of the movie, you're like, oh, this kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And they set it up for a sequel, but you're not connected enough with the characters to even give a fuck about a sequel. Like, you don't care at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really helped me that I went in knowing it was going to be bad, to the point where actually when I went to buy a ticket, The guy was like, all right, like, you know, pick your seat or whatever. And I said, hold up. There are five people going to see this piece of shit movie. And he didn't bat an eye. He just said, where the hell do you want to sit, kid? So, yeah. So, but it helped, though. It reminded me a little bit of the Fantastic Four movie that Josh Trank did, where I went in with such low expectations that it was like, okay, I know what I'm kind of getting myself into. Wasn't great. It was better than Dark Phoenix.
Okay, that's good.
So, but it's not far off Dark Phoenix. But the difference with Dark Phoenix is you were hoping that they were going to end on a high note, so your expectation level was kind of there.
Yeah.
Whereas this, you know, I saw War with Grandpa.
All right. So was that actually a sequel to Bad Grandpa or no?
No, not at all.
Because I saw you post
that.
No,
yeah, I got a screener for it, and I was like, yeah, I got time on my hands. Like I have time on a Thursday at 10 p.m. to watch this movie that looks terrible. I really watched it to find out, will adults want to slit their wrist watching it with their kids? Because it's clearly a kids movie.
Yeah.
It also had some heavy hitters in it. It's got like Cheech Marin. It's got Rob Riggle, Uma Thurman, Christopher Walken, and obviously Robert De Niro. And then it became clear to me what went down with this movie was Cheech Marin and Christopher Walken said, okay, we'll be able to hang out with our boy, Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro did it for a paycheck. And Uma Thurman and Rob Riggle did it to say we were in a movie with Robert De Niro. But it was so bad. Really, really bad. Trial of Chicago 7. Did you see that?
Dude, no. That's on my list. That's a movie, right?
Yeah, and it's the first movie I've seen in I don't know how long where I was actually blown away.
Okay, I heard
which
that.
Which speaks to how bad movies have been this year.
Yeah.
But that movie, I went, holy shit, that's... I'm a big Aaron Sorkin fan. I was just blown away by it. The performances are great. Sacha Baron Cohen was great in it. There wasn't a bad performance in it. And there's nobody that you look at in this movie and you go, oh, they're a heavy hitter. I recognize them. I know their name, maybe. But there's nobody in there that's like a Tom Hanks. And yet it's just strong performances all around. So okay. It's definitely worth watching.
So my friend Jules said the same thing. And I was supposed to watch it, but I'm sure you were going to get to this. Queen's Gambit. Did you start that?
Yeah, I'm on episode 5 of that. I was actually watching it during dinner.
Okay. So I went through that. And then I have to get to Mr. Mercedes that Chuck recommended like forever ago because now it's on Peacock. So there are the two things I was going to do. But you know what? Maybe I'll squeeze in the movie tonight because I heard just like you said that it's just so good. Sacha Baron Cohen, I heard he was great. So I should watch that.
Yeah, the one guy from Succession is in it. Do you watch? You don't watch Succession?
No, but you told me to watch it, and I want to. It's not Kieran Culkin, is it?
Yeah.
Because he's
no, it's his brother, but he's really good in it. So
okay.
I watched this awful. Oh my god, it was so bad. This awful Hulu movie called Turkey Bowl.
Yeah.
I had heard that.
Yeah.
All right. So the only reason I watched this was I had heard. I'm gonna be moving the camera around a little bit. I had heard that they were making a movie with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, and it was all set around this rivalry Turkey Bowl game where the two come back in their town and they re-up it. And then I saw this on Hulu, and I said, "Oh my god, they actually made this movie! The guys must have dropped out, whatever." Dude, if this is connected with that movie that I mentioned, it's a good thing they dropped out. Hot fucking garbage.
Oh no.
So bad. I was disappointed in myself for finishing this movie. It just
it's the Blue Mountain State guy, isn't it?
Really, really bad. And that was
isn't it him?
He's in it, yeah. Thad Castle. And I don't
Yeah,
he's the quote the bad guy in it.
Okay.
And he's a good actor. Well, he's good in comedies. So I don't understand why he's doing crap like this. Maybe it's because his career hasn't taken off the way maybe he thought, but he's better than this. And the guy who played the lead in the movie, I forget his name, but he's one of those guys you recognize because he's been like a bit actor in some comedies, but this is a leading role for him. He's supposed to be this high school star quarterback. You don't buy it at all. He just doesn't fit the mold at all.
Okay.
That was movie number 83. 84 was Hubie Halloween.
I saw it. I liked it.
And
yeah. It's stupid.
You want to talk about two movies where you go in and they probably both should have been hot garbage.
Yeah.
But I liked one a lot better than the other. This is the perfect example. I go from Turkey Bowl, horrible trash, Hubie Halloween going in it with low expectations. And I loved it. I loved it so much. I was all in this movie.
Yeah.
The fact that the entire town hated him, they shitted on him. Anything with Julie Bowen in it, I mean, it bumps up a couple points. And then I saw Borat, obviously. Yeah, Borat. Yeah, you saw it, you said?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
It wasn't as good as the first one, but man, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was good. I mean, some of the stunts they did, apparently they went really bad. And they cut it out of the movie, like the one where he was singing to the far right Trump guys.
Yeah.
Apparently they attacked him and chased him down the street, and he cut it out because it was too bad, I guess. Like, he broke character and everything. They have a film of that. Did you see it?
No, I got to check that out.
Yeah, he like broke character.
I was telling my mom today about, all right, I got to sneak into a Mike Pence rally, so let me blend in, and he's wearing the KKK outfit walking through.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god, that's incredible. I was actually pleasantly surprised with that. And then I got into the movies that I saw during the Philly Film Festival. So the Philly Film Festival this year was pretty much all virtual.
Okay.
You got a virtual pass. It was a pain in the dick, though, man. It was to get the movies on my TV screen, I had to basically go through the web browser on my TV, and this took me an hour to figure out.
Oh no.
Web browser login, it was a whole ordeal, but I ended up seeing a couple of things in that. The first thing I saw was this movie called Survivor Skills, which is set up like a found footage movie, not even a found footage movie. It's like, it's as if you found an old VHS tape, and it's got the VHS graininess. It even skips at times, and it's all about do you remember how they would have Dare tutorials where they would pop in a videotape and they'd have the guy talking. He's like, here's my friend Steve. And then they'd show like some random guy, and Steve likes bacon. And Steve'd be like, man, I could go for some bacon. It was like that. But it was a cop tutorial training video. And the cop ended up going down a different path than the narrator wanted him to. And it was very unique. The way that the movie was made was very well done. Very, very unique. Storyline lacked, though. I mean, the storyline didn't grab me at all, but it was worth watching just for how unique it was. The next thing I saw was One Night in Miami, which this is getting Oscar buzz. It's Regina King's directorial debut. I actually saw this at a drive-in. So they had some of the movies at drive-ins that you could go to, and some of them were actually free that you just needed to go and, quote, buy a ticket, but they were free. And so this is the first movie I've ever seen in a drive-in. And it was cool, kind of. It was also weird. I don't know if I'd make it a normal thing. I went to two movies at a drive-in.
I've never been there. Now, didn't they change it to you link up to a radio station and then you hear the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was unique. Basically, you shut off your lights, you shut off everything in the car, but you leave the radio on. They also had an app that would allow you to, you know, use your app to get the sound. But the problem is the way my car was situated, I could see 85% of the screen. Like, if I was sitting normal, so I had to spend the whole movie like this. It's look, the movie's good, and I understand why it's getting Oscar buzz. I just didn't think it was the most entertaining movie. Like, it's very well acted. The storyline was, it oddly reminded me of Dazed and Confused, because it all takes place in one night.
Okay.
I guess that's why it's called One Night in Miami.
Yeah.
Very creative title. But it's based on a stage play, and you could tell that. After reading about it, you go, okay, because it really only takes place in a couple of locations, and the main movie takes place in a hotel room. It was good. I don't think anyone needs to rush out to see it, though. But I do understand why it's getting Oscar buzz. The next one I saw was this Riz Ahmed movie that's coming out on Amazon in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so.
Okay, this one is from the images I saw that you sent. This one looked the most interesting.
Yeah, this, okay, first of all, Riz Ahmed was so good in this movie.
Yeah, he's good.
So good, man. He's really strong. So the basic premise of this movie is he's in a punk band with his girlfriend, and he's a recovering addict. I mean, this guy's been addicted to everything. and he all of a sudden wakes up one day and he's having trouble hearing. It's like there's just white noise going around and he can hear 25%, and he goes to the doctor and finds out that he's literally got 25% of his hearing left and he's got degenerative hearing loss. And immediately, well, because he's a musician, it's how he deals with that news that he's going to have a hard time. He's basically going deaf. How he deals with his addiction and how he deals with, can I ever fix this or not, while dealing with also his relationship. And it was cool. It was a little distracting at first because I started the movie and it had subtitles and I didn't realize why there were subtitles. And then I realized, yeah, dipshit, he's going deaf. Yeah. You know, at times they play the movie off like you are hearing what he's hearing. So that's why they needed subtitles. It was good though, man. He's really, really good in it. I mean, that's not a surprise. He's a very good actor. The other person that was in it was Olivia Cooke, who, if you remember, played, she was
sounds familiar.
Artemis in the, okay. Ready Player One movie, and she was really good in it too.
I like her a lot. She was also in Thoroughbreds.
Yes.
With
sorry, my TV just went off.
That's okay. With Anya Taylor-Joy, who I'm going to talk to about a little later.
Oh my god, dude.
Yeah. We'll just touch on Queen's Gambit because this is the third episode this week. I'm going to say a couple things after you're done your what's new. So I'll get to that later. But yeah, I like her. She's good.
Yeah, look, very good movie. One of the best ones that was probably the best movie I watched. The best thing I watched was this. I think Jack's playing hockey upstairs. it's weird, man. He all of a sudden like woke up one day and realized like, oh, I don't hate hockey. Nice. Refuses to hold a hockey stick, plays hockey with a PVC pipe, and just starts smacking a ball around yelling goal.
Progress.
Hilarious. yeah, we're getting there. The best thing I watched, though, was this documentary called Banksy Most Wanted, and it's obviously on the artist Banksy, but it goes into his backstory, and then it goes into some theories on who Banksy is, and it was just very well done. It's very interesting. I think we're all probably familiar with Banksy, or you've seen a Banksy. If you're not familiar with Banksy, you've definitely seen a Banksy painting. I think I first heard of him when he had his painting sold and then flipped a switch and the painting started getting torn up at the auction house. But it was cool, man. It was, they go into like just different theories about who he might be. And
I need to see this. I'm interested in that. I've always found it fascinating how he's kept it such a good secret all these years.
You know, and they go into that. They interview his old publicist. They interview a couple of people who think they found out who he is. They interview a couple of journalists, and they kind of leave it up to you to figure out, you know, which theory you believe. But his first publicist said, you know, the easiest way we did this was we would just put on a fluorescent vest, throw up some traffic cones, and no one ever noticed. And I don't know if this is true or not, because I think part of the myth of Banksy is the fact that people throw you off the scent by lying. But the guy said, I'll tell you right now, he's never done a painting or a stencil. He's never done one at night, ever. He's always done it during the day, and
just
no one's ever
noticed. Daylight. Wow. That's crazy.
But yeah, it's it was very well done, man. This one I was actually really pumped. Well, like, okay, like this was 1000% worth my time, and I was invested into it. So if you're a fan of documentaries, that was it. And then the last thing I watched was I watched a couple other ones. This movie called The Obituary of Tunde Johnson, which was another very uniquely made movie, kind of done in a Groundhog Day, Palm Springs type. The basic premise, though, was this high school kid who is gay, who is going to come out to his parents that day, comes out to his parents, goes out to a party, and gets pulled over by the cops and gets shot. Wakes up the next day, relives it all over again, tweaks it, different things change, but he keeps dying. One way or another, he keeps getting killed by the police in some form, whether it's being choked out, whether it's, you know, basically all that. So it's interesting because it's the Groundhog Day formula in a more serious tone with the current climate that we live in. And it was good, but it was a heavy movie though. But it was apparently made by a kid who was like 20 years old, who wrote the script. So kudos to whoever wrote it. It was worth watching though.
Yeah, what's this called? I'm watching that one again.
The Obituary of Tunde Johnson. I don't know when that's going to be out, because if you remember, do you remember me talking about last year, the documentary on the Eagles winning the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
That's getting released tomorrow.
Wow.
So, you know, I saw it a year ago. My review's been up on YouTube for a year about this documentary, and it's finally getting a release date tomorrow. It pissed me off because now, you know, every blog, you know, The Ringer and Philly Voice and Philly.com, all of a sudden they're, hey, this documentary's out. I'm like, bitch, I've had that review up for a year straight, for 12 months. So anyway, I'm just bitter. I'm very bitter. But yeah, it was worth watching. I will say, I think you have to be in the right mood to watch this movie. The second one, the last one was One of These Days. This was very, very well done. Very good movie. Basically, the director of this movie lives in Texas. He based this film off of a documentary on these people in Podunk, Texas, who entered a contest for a car dealership to keep their hand on a car. Last one to keep their hand on the car ends up winning the car. You know, I think we've all kind of heard of at least a variation of this contest before, but this is a film where you get all these different people in this small town who win the contest, and now it's up to them to, you know, leave their hand on the car for a certain time and how they deal with that, but also the pressure that some of these people are under to win this car for financial reasons, and then the mental games that other contestants play on one another. And the ending was not what I thought and literally had me go, holy shit. Like, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
So very, very good, man. That one's called One of These Days. Another one where I don't know when this is going to come out, but when it does, and I could totally see this movie being one that Amazon grabs, Hulu grabs, and it kind of just sits there, and you know, it's 7 months from now you see it and you go, oh, that sounds familiar, I wonder why, and then you remember like we talked about it. But
yeah,
definitely worth watching. I really, really enjoyed it. And then the last thing I saw from the film festival was this documentary called Enemies of the State, and it was a documentary about this family whose son was a part of Anonymous, the hacker group, apparently got some files and the U.S. government came after him, so they had to flee the country to Canada, try to get citizenship in Canada, end up getting deported back because the U.S. government going after him to try to get the files that he got, came up with a charge that he was getting, that he had a bunch of child porn on his computer that his family vehemently denied. And the mother claimed that the file, she goes into what was on the files and why the U.S. government wanted it back so bad. I thought it was going to be better, honestly. I thought it was going to be a better story. It's a good story. I just thought it was going to be, I don't know, more nefarious, I guess.
Yeah.
Part of the issue with this documentary was I saw it the night the Eagles played maybe the Giants or Dallas or something like that. And this movie, I think I got home at the end of the first quarter and I DVR'd the game. But I spent a good portion of the movie being like, I really hope I get home and I don't find out the score.
Yeah.
So with that said, I might have not been in the right state of mind. It was an interesting story, no doubt, but I just it lacked something. And then the last thing I watched is a movie that you talked about. I actually bought this on Vudu because Vudu had one of those deals of like two movies for $10. And one of the movies I really wanted and the other movie was this, Becky.
Becky, yeah. Mm-hmm.
With, what's his name?
Joel McHale.
No, but who's the bad guy?
Oh, who is the bad guy in Becky? I'll look that up right now.
Kevin James.
Yes, Kevin James. Yeah, I mean, he played a role that he's never really played before, so.
Never done anything like this before.
Yeah.
And I went back and forth with it, with him in this role, whether I liked it or not. And upon reading up on the movie, if you're not familiar with the movie, I know you've talked about it, but it was months ago. Basically, this father-daughter go on a trip to their lake home, and these prisoners who broke out of prison go to that same lake house to try to retrieve something that they hid there years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And shit goes sideways, and the 11-year-old daughter turns into a more realistic version of Hannah and starts going on a kind of a killing spree of all of them. And the bad guy's Kevin James. And I went back and forth with if I liked him in the role. I guess ultimately I did, because mm-hmm. it was just, it, you know, it's hard to envision him not being
Yeah, like Hubie Halloween.
Yeah, you know, the best friend of Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he was intimidating in it.
Yeah, he was.
And the girl in it was really good. And I forget what she's been in. She's been in a few things where I looked at her IMDb and saw, okay, yeah, like I recognize her from that. But the original person that was supposed to play Kevin James's role was Simon Pegg. Huh. So they clearly went for people that don't fit the narrative of a neo-Nazi. I've been in prison for the past 10 years. I know I'm willing to kill anything role, because Simon Pegg is not that. Kevin James isn't that either. So I fucking love this movie. I loved it, man.
Nice.
I immediately tweeted the director, the writer, begging for a sequel. They set it up where there could be a sequel. The actress who played Becky said that she would be totally into doing a sequel. So there is the possibility of doing it. I think what hurts this movie, though, was it came out right as the pandemic hit. It was in some select theaters, not very many, didn't make a lot of money. Basically went the direct-to-DVD role, or direct-to-streaming role. So I hope that we get some more Becky, because it was such a uniquely done, cool flick. And then other than that, man, I mean, I know I just went through pretty much 3 months of movies, but...
No, yeah, Queen's, it was good.
Queen's Gambit, like we talked, like you mentioned. I'm trying to think of what else. I started watching The Mandalorian. I got one episode into that.
Okay.
The problem with The Mandalorian was my work got hit with COVID, so we've been broadcasting from home. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed in the building until I get a negative test. I got a negative test, but they said that I got it too early, so I had to go get tested again yesterday. So I can't even go in and record recaps or anything until I get a negative test. So I only watched the one episode, but I liked what I saw. And then I finished Lovecraft Country.
And I heard you had a struggle at the end.
I just didn't like it.
Okay.
It was too convoluted.
Yeah.
It was too much shit going on. I don't like Jonathan Abrams, Majors or whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah.
I don't like him at all. He doesn't enunciate. The amount of times I had to rewind and put on subtitles because I can't understand what the fuck he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot. There's a lot of this in this show going on. Yeah, they wrap it up. Look, I hope for my sake they have a season two, because I'd like to think that I didn't just waste all this fucking time. My recap for this show, because it's so convoluted, is 2 fucking hours.
Wow.
So I hope that they have a season two, so I didn't waste all my time. But it was a struggle to get through that show for me, because I think for most people out there, you know, if you get 3 episodes in and you just give up. Mm-hmm. But for me, when I started recapping it, once I start recapping it, I'm in it. And I thought it was only 8 episodes. It was 10. Look, you might like it because it's got a sci-fi element for sure. But for me, there was one aspect that I loved. Other than that, struggling. Queen's Gambit, I'm loving, though. Really like that.
Yeah, very good. Very, very good. I wasn't sure how I liked it at first, but it just got better and better and better. And she's doing a great job, man. Anya Taylor-Joy, she's really good.
The fact that she can pull off that hairstyle.
Uh-huh, and she does pull it off.
You know, and it reminds me a little bit of Margot Robbie in I, Tonya, where she didn't look good in I, Tonya because she's playing Tonya Harding, yet she still looked good playing Tonya Harding. And maybe it's because I know what she actually looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But Anya Taylor-Joy, like, no one should ever have this hairstyle. And it's clear that she dyed her hair red while she was a blonde because it turned orange. She's got straight up orange hair.
Yeah.
Doesn't look good. But she's just, oh my God, I have such a thing for her.
I know.
You know what movie she did look good in was New Mutants.
Oh, I bet
New
she
Mutants,
did.
She looked gorgeous in it.
Yeah,
but
I bet she did.
Yeah, I might be biased just because when I have a crush on an actor or actress or whatever, I have so many crushes on actors. Not there's anything wrong with that, but when I have a crush on an actress, it's like the acting part goes out the window.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't give a fuck if they can act or not. So I I've had such a thing for her since Split.
Yeah.
I wish she'd go back to the dark hair, but whatever. But I don't know if you're aware of this, Daniel. I am a 2006 Catholic League chess champion.
I don't know that.
Oh yeah. I'll send you the video. Maybe you can splice it into to this video here. I mean, a little video.
Yeah.
I will text you right now.
Yeah, I can slice it in.
Yeah. So we used to call each other the United Nations because we had every demographic on this Cardinal Doherty chess team. We had the captain was this black guy named Hakeem, and then we had three Asians, and then we had me, okay, the white dude. So United, we were all represented, and then we just showed up, fuck shit up, you know, checkmated bitches, and
so you got understand trophies. You understand like all the verbiage in it and everything like that.
Yeah, so I never once took score or kept track of the game.
Okay.
And when we played, it was funny when we played LaSalle, I was on the I was the sixth member of the team.
Okay.
You started five, but I started against LaSalle, so thus my name is on the trophy, and LaSalle was probably our biggest test because it's a bunch of smart kids whose parents are paying, you know, $20,000 for them to go to college or go to high school, and then there's Doherty, and you know, it's I rep Doherty harder than I rep anything.
Yeah,
but there's definitely a discrepancy in, I want to say, probably household income.
Yeah,
between LaSalle and Doherty.
Yeah,
so they showed up. I can't find it. You know, it's on my Instagram. But they showed up and I started, and I'm sitting there reading the newspaper, playing this kid who is tracking the game just like they do in the show.
Yeah. All right. So can you explain that after this? Cause Sasha and I had no idea what that was about, but yeah.
Yeah. So he's sitting there with his notepad, his notepaper, right? And every single move he's just, I mean, breaking everything down, and he's taking forever. And I want everyone out there to visualize this. I'm sitting there like an asshole reading the daily news sports section. And whenever I would hear the little click of the timer, I would fold up the paper, put it down, see what he did, make my move, and then pick up the paper and start over again.
Oh my gosh.
I wasn't doing it to be an asshole. I just wasn't gonna sit there and watch this kid stare at a board for an hour. I mean, our game took the longest because of this kid. And so, you know, there's articles in that newspaper. I'm going to read them. There's a Sudoku. Maybe it got this kid off his game, because if you watch, how far are you in the Queen's Gambit?
I finished it.
Okay. There's a scene. I'm not done with it. I'm on episode five, but there's a scene where she's playing somebody and she clearly starts getting up and walking around to get in their head.
Yeah. Yep.
And it works. And maybe in this case it worked, whatever. But anyway, so we ended up winning that game. And it came down to my game, too, because we split both games. And then my game was the final one. I checkmated that bitch. He's never recovered. I think he's down at K&A right now, trying to grab some rock. But he's never recovered.
He's had to be embarrassed by that. He had to be.
How could he not be, honestly?
All right, so what is that? Because in the show, they're doing it all the time. And I have no idea what they're doing in that little notebook. I have no idea.
Yeah, so you keep score, and what you do is you mark down the moves in the game so that you can go back into the game. You can go back after the game and relive the game and try to figure out where you went wrong. So instead of having game tape, in every other sport you have game tape. You have your tape of the game, you go into film study, and you know, you watch film. And in chess, you don't do that because you could. I mean, you theoretically could set up a camera and do that, no problem. But it's quicker to just set up the game, go back, find out where you went wrong, find out where you can improve. And you see her do that all the time in the show, where she's setting up the board in mid-game to find out either where her weaknesses are, where her flaws are. There's the scene where the guy who she split with tells her, you know, you should have done this, and they go back and they set up the game just like that. Most players aren't like her, cerebral, who can remember every single moment of every single game from memory.
Yeah.
She's a rare one. But most players have to go back and they chart their game. So in a couple of times she opens up in the beginning of the movies, she opens up books and whatnot, and you see jotted down in these books about chess, the notes of how they did what, and that's what it is. So It's just people charting their moves to figure out at the end of it if they won or lost, where they can improve. Okay. It's really just a training technique.
Yeah.
I never did it. I truth be told, I wasn't gonna go back and do it. I was decent at chess. I was not good enough to ever play in college on a team or something like that. It was more of just like, yeah, I got time.
You beat LaSalle. So can you still do work now if you played like the average show?
Dude, I haven't played in years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably been 10 years since I played. Wow. It'd take me a bit to, you know, get back in the grind. You know, in high school, we were playing, you know, pretty regularly, like every week, just murking schools. I mean, you know, embarrassing them. And I'm pretty sure that's why LaSalle didn't let me into their college.
Yeah.
It was because they heard about what went down and they were like, shit, I mean, you know, he embarrassed the high school. We can't let him into the college. Still pissed off about that. LaSalle can go fuck themselves. But you know, I wanted to go there so bad too. I don't know why. But yeah. So I mean, I could probably, yeah, I could beat some people, but if you're playing regularly, you'd probably beat the shit out of me because I haven't played in forever. So
yeah, well, I think it's really good, and I think they did a great job of splicing. You know, not only basically she was Bobby Fischer from what I looked up. That's what they really based her on. Now I don't know if he had drug issues like that, but the way they put all that into it and had a story how she was an orphan. The guy who trained her, Bob Camp, I love him. I think he's such a great actor.
He's a great actor.
Bill Camp? Yeah, Bill Camp. I love him in almost everything I see him in, and he's popping up more and more. So yeah, I thought it was a really, really well-made story. And it's a miniseries, right? So that's it?
Yeah, that's Shannon texted me and said, it's not a dye job, it's a wig. And I'm telling her now to shut your hole, woman. Because she's not a part of the podcast.
What's a wig?
She said that Anya Taylor-Joy's hair was a wig.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good for you.
And I told her to shut her mouth because, you know, women are supposed to be either in the kitchen or making babies. That's it. Or cleaning the house. We don't want to hear from you.
Well, she can pop in if she wants.
Joking, by the way, because somebody's going to take that audio and just cut that only, and I'll be back on NBC 10. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you know about Bobby Fischer, but that whole backstory is fascinating. There's a really, really good movie that you can find now on Hulu that I watched probably 2 years ago called Pawn Sacrifice. It's either on Hulu, Amazon, one of the two.
Heard of it, didn't see it.
Tobey Maguire plays Bobby Fischer, and Bobby Fischer's big rival was Boris Spassky, who they mention in Queen's Gambit. And just slowly but surely, Fischer, who was a child prodigy genius, probably the greatest American chess player of all time, he just went crazy. He started thinking that people were following him, as you know, people were wiretapping. He died not a couple of years ago, but he ended up getting citizenship in, I want to say, Iceland. And there was a big thing about that. He ended up fleeing the country. So it was unfortunate what happened to Bobby Fischer, but his matches were legendary in the 60s. And it was at the time of the Cold War. So it was like, you know, it was the chess version of the 1980 Miracle on Ice team and, you know, the race to the moon and all that. But yeah, the Pawn Sacrifice is a very, very good movie where Tobey Maguire plays him. Liev Schreiber plays Boris Spassky. Can't suggest it enough, man. If you like Queen's Gambit, you're gonna love Pawn Sacrifice.
Yeah. Do you know where it's at anywhere or nah?
I'll look it up now because I got my smart TV. I'm pretty sure it is on. Last time I checked, it was on Hulu. Okay. But it's definitely worth watching. You see, unfortunately, you see him slowly go down a bad place where you're like, you know, you can just see his mind just. Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Okay,
his mind just turned to mush, but. Very, very good. So when you're finished with Pawn Sacrifice, well, you're done. But for those out there, if you haven't seen Pawn Sacrifice, really, really good, man. Really good.
It seems like the perfect thing to watch after that, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, Queen's Gambit, I read, was a book. So this is all based off a book. So unfortunately, you're not going to get anything after it. But I'm interested to see what this writer did in terms of anything else, because it's very, very well done. I'm heavily into the series, which is nice, because I can't really think of anything else that I really want to watch right now. There's some movies out there that I want to watch, but it's like you got to devote the time. And
I'll let you know how Mr. Mercedes is. I have pretty high hopes for that. It looks pretty good.
What is that?
So it's a Stephen King. It's a Stephen King book. Okay, and the story, I'm pulling it up right now. But ever since went to Hulu, and apparently it's free on Hulu. Okay, so here it is. It's an American crime drama television series based on the novel trilogy by Stephen King. It consists of Mr. Mercedes, Finders Keepers, and End of Watch. So I'm guessing they're like Game of Thrones-ing it and just calling the series after the first book. I mean, American crime series, but it has Brendan Gleeson, who I love.
You said it's on Hulu?
It's on Peacock, but it's free on Hulu. Peacock. No, if I did, I meant Peacock. It's free on Peacock. Apparently, you don't need to have the premium service to watch it.
Okay.
So I'm going to check that out. I mean, I love Brendan Gleeson, man. Did you ever see In Bruges?
I started watching it, and I got halfway through it.
Okay.
And I never went back to it.
I think it's really good, but I know it's definitely not for everybody. But he's also in Gangs of New York. He's the barber.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, he's phenomenal. And he's good in everything he does. You know where he's actually great in? And now this will be one of those episodes where, because we haven't talked in so long, I'm going to start remembering things that I've watched.
Yeah, that's fine.
So he was in the Showtime docuseries, not docuseries, drama, the two-part drama on James Comey with the Trump campaign, and mm-hmm. how James Comey went from investigating Hillary Clinton and her emails to staying on with Trump to ultimately getting fired. But Gleason plays Trump.
Hmm.
Holy shit. He had this guy dead on. I mean, you can tell it's Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah.
Because of just the fact that, you know, it looks like Brendan Gleeson. Don't get me wrong with that. But the hair, the tan, more so his mannerisms and the way he sounds. You know, he's got that Brendan Gleeson, you know, gruff voice, but the way that he speaks is scary how accurate it is to listening to Trump.
I need and to see this.
Yeah. It was really, really good. It's two parts.
It's on Prime?
And this is on Showtime.
Showtime, okay.
And it was really, really interesting. It's not going to make Trump people happy. I think they're all stay away from it.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting how the election went down in 2016, how the Hillary stuff affected it, how James Comey was kind of a simpleton in the sense of, you know, he's one of these guys who wanted to do right by everybody and kind of had this idea of holding up this, putting the FBI on a pedestal and not realizing the trickle-down effect that his decisions were having and then ultimately getting canned by Trump when Trump turned on him. But it was a very interesting look into the Trump campaign. I have no reason to doubt the show. I have no I think it was based off a James Comey book. I have no reason to doubt anything. Nothing really was surprising. If you're a cuck-lib soy boy like myself, nothing that that you saw in it was all that surprising. They kind of painted Trump to be an egotistical narcissist who didn't have a fucking clue. Like at one point he calls up Comey and is just bragging about something that he did, and then brought up, well, you know, I had a very productive meeting with Egypt about this thing that happened, terrible thing. And Comey goes, sir, I think you mean Israel.
Oh no.
You mean it's, and it's just like, it's one of those, like, this guy really doesn't have a fucking clue what's going on. I mean, not surprising. Yeah. It's all right though. They'll recount some votes and I'm sure he'll win, but very worth watching. There is, and I don't think you would like this because you don't like this type of show or a mini series, but let me find the I remember what it's called. There's a mini series on Hulu called A Wilderness of Doubt, which is one of these true crime mini series. I think it's five parts, and it's about this military doctor who ended up waking up, and this is his story that he claims. He woke up, and there were a bunch of hippies surrounding him. This is around the Manson time. And they murdered his wife, and they murdered his two children, who were all of 9 and 10, maybe. His wife was pregnant. He claimed that, you know, these people did it. They got away. And then it became a, did he do it? Did these mystery people do it? We think we know who might have done it. She claims she did it. Then she walks back that she did it. She might have done it. She was kind of on drugs. But there's no evidence that says she did it. There's evidence that he did it. It was a fascinating look into a crime that I had never personally heard of.
Yeah.
And after watching 5 episodes, I still have no idea who did it. But I don't even really care. It wasn't an unsatisfactory ending to that effect, because I think it's supposed to be a show where you go, you can make strong cases for both sides. At the end of the day, we kind of throw our hands up and like, we have no idea.
Yeah.
But it was very well done. And it was done, and I bring it up because it was done by Blumhouse.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I know you're a big Blumhouse fan. I know you're not a fan of these kind of shows, but I think Sasha is, right? It's
big time. So yeah, I'll surprise her with this. She'll be happy.
Yeah, it's on Hulu, and it was very well done. And it goes into him getting tried, everything. The whole kit and caboodle. So definitely check it out. It was really, really, really good.
Okay. Yeah. That's a hell of a lot of suggestions, man. Thank you.
A Wilderness of Doubt. That's
Wilderness of Doubt.
Yeah.
I'm on that.
Very good. I also watched speaking of true crime, I watched that Netflix doc on the husband in Colorado whose wife disappeared. And she apparently like took her children. It was called like the American Home Next Door or something. Did you not hear about this?
Was this the one he killed the wife and the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. That was bad, man. That was hard to watch.
Yeah, I didn't know what happened in it. And apparently this story was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And no one told me. So I'm watching it and I'm texting somebody that I know who's big into true crime. We had texted a lot about the one on the Golden State Killer on HBO, which is very good. So I texted her and was mentioning, you know, this case. And she ruined it for me.
Oh, no.
She's like, yeah, it's unfortunate that he killed the kids. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hold the fuck, what? I'm like 20 minutes in. I'm thinking maybe the guy didn't do it. No, he did. He did it. And not only that, the guy's a fucking idiot.
It was for the other girl. So stupid.
For the other girl. But also, yeah, it's like he sets this up, this whole charade up of her friend drops her off. Her friend can't get in touch with her the next day. And her friend feels like something's wrong. By the way, get you a friend like that friend.
Yeah.
Because if I text my buddy, if I text my best friend right now and he doesn't get back to me, I just go, oh, he's probably working.
Yeah.
Her friend doesn't get back to her in 5 hours. And she's like, I'm going over there. And it forces him to come back. And he does this whole thing of, oh, our cell phone's here. Something happened. Oh, you know, and it's like, did you really think you would get away with this?
I know. So dumb.
Then he goes in and takes a polygraph test. It's like, dipshit, you know you did it.
Yeah, that was the worst. Oh, my gosh.
And he keeps trying to walk, like, double down on it or dig himself a deeper hole by saying, well, okay, I mean, you know, yeah, I knew what happened to him. I killed her. But it was only because she killed them. And this sounds horrible, what I'm about to say. I don't have a problem so much with him killing his wife. I have a problem with it in the sense of, you obviously don't kill your wife. Killing the children is so unnecessary.
It really was. Yeah.
And I'm not even saying this as a father now, but you didn't need to do that.
No.
You know, you could have. I once again, this is going to make me sound like a cold-hearted person, but if you kill your wife and you do it in a moment of passion or anger, whatever the hell it is, and you get angry and you do it, whatever, and if the kids see it, whatever, you don't have to kill them.
Right.
You know, you can put them in the car, You can drive them to your parents' house. You can drive them to a friend's house, whatever, knowing full well I'm going to be caught. I don't have to kill my kids. Like,
no.
I've wanted, Lord knows, she's tested me, okay? And there have been times where that pillow looks good. And I see her with her eyes closed, and I'm like, we got a nice little life insurance policy. But, I mean, I'm throwing myself in front of a bullet for the kid.
Yeah.
I could never, and that's the thing, I'm watching this documentary, and at the time, the TV was in his room. I since moved it down to this basement that you see behind me. And I look over, and I'm, like, looking at him sleeping, and I cannot, as a parent, envision a scenario where not only do you kill the children, but then you just drop them off in an oil tank, like dropping their lifeless body in an oil tank. I want this dude to get brutally raped in prison.
Yeah, man.
I want his asshole torn up. Yeah. I mean, I like, this guy is a horrible human being. So, yeah, it was tough to watch. It was sad. Mm-hmm. It was also very, very good. She said, wait till I gone girl you, then use this podcast episode at your trial. There you go.
She texted me.
So, yeah, she could. I mean, when we saw Gone Girl, she said, you know, I could do that and get away with it, right? I said, yeah, probably. I mean, you're smart enough. So, just know that when I go missing, it wasn't an accident.
Yeah, but man, that made me sick too. Yeah, so that was one that Sash got me to watch. Yeah, it's just, oh my goodness. I can't even imagine, dude. So yeah, hopefully he gets every fucking inch of that dick that's coming to him. Seriously.
He had to be moved from the original prison because of the fact that he was getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
So he's in a high, you know, like one of those, I don't know what they call them. But one where, you know, you're heavily protected or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And once again, I mean, I don't mean to sound cold-hearted for her, you know, for dying. There's no excuse for killing your wife. That's
no,
you know, I mean, shit, man, just hire a fucking divorce lawyer.
Yeah.
With that said, I did not think she came off well in this documentary at all.
Yeah. That's
off like a very nagging, just, I mean, I wouldn't want to marry her. She was a bitch, but with that said, you don't need to kill her.
You don't need to kill her.
And
obviously something's wrong with this guy big time that he had it in him to kill his children too. I mean, any parent out there would just like turn their stomachs turning right now. It's just, you don't do that.
Yeah. It was definitely like tough to watch. So, but if you like that though, A Wilderness of Doubt was really, really good.
Okay.
Really, really good.
Yeah. All right. Is that about it? Got more? I want to go to the Philly Film Festival with you next time.
Dude, I was so sad that
it couldn't actually happen. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it could, but I also am cognizant of the fact that they didn't have as many movies as they normally do. I texted my buddy from Netflix and said, oh, hey, what movies do you have in the festival this year? Because last year they had The Irishman.
Right.
The Irishman, I think it debuted at maybe Tribeca or Cannes, but it also came out at the Philly Film Festival about a month before it actually came out on Netflix. And it was a big deal. I mean, it was one that I had to beg my way into.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it works is you can get a press pass, but the press pass can only get you into certain movies. The high profile movies, you can't get into. You have to pay just like everybody else. So for one night in Miami, I had to pay.
Okay.
It was $40 per car. Which isn't bad. I mean, if you grab four people, it's $10 a person. But
yeah,
you know, we just grabbed a pizza and went, the two of us. But I went like, all right, like, you know, I don't pay for movies anyway. I'll take this. But there was something really enjoyable last year about the one night that I went to maybe next year. And then I walked down and saw The Report.
Mm-hmm.
The what's his name?
Adam Driver
movie. And the walk was probably 10 blocks or whatever, but it was around this time and the weather was very similar to what it is now. I mean, it was like short sleeves weather, and there's just walking through old city Philadelphia, it's just, I love this city so much. And it's one of those like, shit, man, like I'm so lucky to be from here. Mm-hmm. So, I miss that. I miss that ability. I was able to see more movies with the virtual pass that I had, but at the same time, they didn't have as many, they didn't have as many movies. Like every year they've had an Oscar movie early. And, I think One Night in Miami is going to be that movie, but the other movie they had was the other high profile movie they had was this movie with Saoirse Ronan and Kate Winslet, which looked horrible. It didn't look like my kind of movie that I want to see. Okay. It was one of these period pieces where I think the two are lesbians, and you know, that's probably a movie that's going to be up for some awards. Like, what was that Armie Hammer movie? Call Me by Your Name.
Yeah,
but. Yep. It just wasn't for me. And then there was this movie with Frances McDormand called Nomadland that also looked like, okay, that might be the high profile movie. That might be the award movie along with One Night in Miami. But other than that, I think they took a hit on trying to get films. I forgot to say, I started talking and then I just forgot about the Netflix thing. So I asked my buddy and he said, yeah, like we're not putting movies into the festival this year. Because you can just sit at home and watch them when they come out. I was like, well, all right, that does make sense. Okay.
Yeah.
And for the press, we can just email them and hopefully get a screener like I did with Chicago 7. I'm trying to get Mank right now. Oh. But yeah, I'm pumped for that. But normal year, no COVID, Mank probably would have been in the Philly Film Festival.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I want you to go too, because they also, it goes from, it was cool, man. You walk from like the Ritz, South Philly one to the Prince Theater. And then there was the one in Society Hill. That's where I saw The Vast of Night. Mm. And that's the thing is, you know, some of these movies that are available during the festival are free, like The Vast of Night. And you kind of go in like, yeah, I hope this doesn't suck.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because it's free. And then it ends up being incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful thing about this, the festival. So I was disappointed that we didn't get that opportunity. Hopefully by next year. I mean, you know, now that we have a vaccine that's reportedly out all of a sudden, who knows? But when next year rolls around, I'll definitely let you know. And, you know, hey, apply for a press pass. Hope for the best.
Yeah. What do you think's gonna happen with the Oscars this year? They happening?
Oh, they'll happen. Yeah, they'll happen. It's just gonna be it's I mean, you know, looking at the list of movies that I've seen this year, it's not gonna be good.
No, it's not.
You know, I don't know. I think right now they've held off on so many movies that you're gonna see a lot of influx of Oscar movies now towards December. Now it's like, all right, well, do we hold off on them? Or do we take advantage of the fact that it is a down year because no one's releasing movies? With that said, you know, a lot of the movies that they've held off on too aren't necessarily Oscar movies.
Yeah, blockbusters. Yeah.
You know, and I know this is going to be a surprise to people, but Fast 9 wasn't going to win an Oscar. So a lot of times when you do look at Oscar movies, they are primarily movies that get released and kind of just trickle out there in these, you know, niche upper crusty theaters, these indie theaters. And then all of a sudden they get nominated and they start trickling into the Regals and the AMCs. And then they stay there for 2 months. And the original release date was September.
Exactly.
So, I mean, like go back and look at the list of Oscar movies. And that's usually honestly what happens. And also when you look at the studios that are getting Oscar nominated movies, Netflix is a heavy player into that. And while they are releasing movies, they have to release movies in theaters for a couple of weeks. I think that this could be a year where they just don't do that. And if they don't do that, then a movie like Chicago 7 and a movie like Mank, and they might have already done that. I haven't looked into it, but they'll already be in there. So, they're not going to postpone the Oscars. There's no way they postpone the Oscars. It'd be stupid to.
Yeah. Just do it virtually if they had to.
Yeah, it's not like movies haven't come out. Mm-hmm. There just haven't been a lot of good movies that have come out. So, but they're not gonna. You know, there's no way. I mean, if they postpone the Oscars, how is Eurovision gonna end up getting the best original song.
Definitely deserves it. Husovic? You talking about Husovic?
Yes.
My hometown? Great one.
Yes.
Dude, I still jam to those songs, man. I love it.
So I we were talking about at work Karate Kid. And we got to a little debate about Karate Kid about if the line finish him is from Karate Kid or Mortal Kombat. It's obviously an age thing here. When you hear the word, when you hear the saying finish him,
I think Mortal Kombat.
I think Mortal Kombat. Jamie thought Mortal Kombat. And Mark thought Mortal Kombat. Jamie and Mark are 38, 39. Me and you, 31. Bob, who's older, said no, it's from Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And we said, no, Karate Kid's thing is sweep the leg. And we went back, and sure enough, there's him yelling, finish him, in Karate Kid. So, you know, we were both right. It was a stupid debate. But we put out a Twitter poll, and Mortal Kombat ends up winning by, like, 90%.
Okay, yeah.
So, at one point, Mark goes, all right, go ahead. Play that Mortal Kombat theme song. And I played Ya Ya Ding Dong instead every time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I just kept playing Ya Ya Ding Dong. So, it was great. So, you're expecting fight, and all of a sudden you hear a 1, 2, 3, 4, bomb. So yeah, it's been like a running joke on the show, but
nice.
Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, well, you covered a shitload. Thank you for that. I was wondering what you were getting into. I can't wait for you to finish the Queen's Gambit. I think it was a very strong finale, so I want to see what you think. A couple news topics, and that's about it.
Are you still COVID free, by the way?
I'm COVID free. Yeah, I am. And apparently it's not good if I get it now because of what happened to me. So I got to be extra careful. But all right, let's go. Outsider. I didn't think it was as good as I thought it was going to be.
I realized I never even finished it.
Yeah. Oh, actually,
I probably got 8 episodes into it too.
It didn't have that drive to keep watching. It definitely didn't. Before I forget, this is Merch Awareness Week. That's why we're having a third episode. And follow us on Twitter, YouTube. We're getting a lot of content on YouTube now. One or two videos a week. And also Pat's YouTube channel at The Recaps on YouTube. So you can get all the recaps that you need. He literally does anything that matters. It'll get a recap as long as it's getting a season 2. But yeah, speaking of getting a season 2, The Outsider will not get a season 2. It is being shopped around, but HBO is not bringing it back. And I honestly thought this would happen more with COVID. And so far, this is the second one, show that I was watching that's not coming back. First one being Glow. I'm not surprised. It didn't have that you need to keep watching. And I listened to this audiobook, and I needed to keep listening. So it just didn't pick up. It didn't translate as well as I thought it could have. I like the cast. I like the story. The ratings actually made a huge jump. There was 1 million people that watched it live for episode 1, and the finale had 2.2 million. So it more than doubled.
That's surprising that they're not bringing it back then.
I know. I'm very surprised by it. Maybe it cost too much money.
That's the thing, though. I mean, how?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, they had the lead. What's his name? Lisp guy.
Ben Mendelsohn.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. They didn't. I mean, who else? There was no name guy. Like
Bill Camp, and he died. Rest in peace. I love R.I.P. that guy. Yeah.
I don't know if I knew that he died in it. Thanks for
whoops.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep watching?
I mean, who knows? But if it's doubling, it can't be that. I don't know. That's surprised. It's Lovecraft Country. I'll kind of be surprised because that looked like a show that cost a lot. This did not look like a show that cost a lot.
Definitely didn't.
It looked like a show that cost as much as any other show.
Yeah, it definitely didn't. I don't know, man. I thought this was going to be the new True Detective because of how much I like the book, and it just didn't even grab me. And it was hard for Sash to watch it at sometimes. I don't know what was wrong with it, but something wasn't there. So, I mean, it's trying to get picked up for a second season. The book was the whole first season, so it's going to be something completely new, unless he's writing a sequel to it. But I don't think it needs one, to be honest. I think this is the type of show, it'll just go down the drain, because this was the meat of the story. This was the awesome story that Stephen King wrote. So, I mean, the fact that it's not getting a second one, whatever.
Oh, real quick, I forgot something that I watched.
Okay.
Documentary on Amazon Prime called Netflix versus the World.
Oh.
And it's really just about the creation of Netflix and how Netflix and Blockbuster got into a heated, you know, rivalry, and how Blockbuster almost put Netflix out of the business a couple times, and the directive path. I mean, Netflix is something that we all watch. It's all part of our lives, some more than others. But if you're into seeing how a juggernaut was built, very good.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of good suggestions, man. All right. Quiet Place. I love the first one. I can't wait to see the second one. This was one of the movies that has been delayed that I was most bummed about. It's going to be a franchise now. I don't know how I feel about this. I want to know how you feel about this. So Jeff Nichols will write and direct the spinoff.
Yes.
I like him. He did Take Shelter. Take Shelter.
Let's go.
And Midnight
Let's
Special.
Let's go.
So you can almost guarantee that Michael Shannon will be the lead. What do you think?
So Jeff Nichols is one of my favorite filmmakers.
Okay.
I have never seen anything that he has done that I did not like. Take Shelter was a movie where you said this better have a payoff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have this movie be I shaved my balls for this.
Yeah.
It had a payoff. Midnight Special was one of my top five movies the year I saw. I think that was 2018.
He's got Loving, great cast. He's
even re- Loving was really good. The worst one was probably Mud, and I even like that.
I like Mud. Yeah, I like Mud.
He's a filmmaker that I repeatedly go back on IMDb and see what is the latest in the production of his movies, because I want to know when the next one's coming out. He is so talented. He's so creative. He does have a man crush on Michael Shannon, but
yeah.
The fact that I got a filmmaker that I love with a movie that I loved, combining the two, I mean, this was like a full-on, you know, movie boner. I thought this movie was primed for something like this, because they wisely did it kind of like The Purge, where they had a small, close-knit story, and then they're going to branch out, because if you can do it with this one family, you can obviously do it with others.
Absolutely, they won't have a problem with that,
No, and I think it's similar to Cloverfield in a lot of ways too. I mean, you know, you take a movie franchise with the monsters and stuff, and okay, Cloverfield did it where it was on a bigger scale. Cloverfield 10 Lane, whatever it was called, did it smaller. But yeah, man, I'm jacked about this news. This was really exciting to me. I mean, Jeff Nichols is like Google alert for me.
All right, you just got me excited for it, because I didn't know how I felt about it, but now that I'm thinking of it, you know, obviously they can go to a different coast, they can do whatever they want, and just show how other people are dealing with this.
Do you remember the way that 10 Cloverfield Lane ended?
Yes.
It was her going off.
Yep.
And you went, okay. Kind of hope they follow that.
I wish they would have. Yeah.
And instead, they did the Cloverfield paradox, which was trash.
Trash. So I still think we'll see another Cloverfield. Hopefully, they do follow Mary Elizabeth Winstead's journey, because that was really neat, the whole thing. Like, because part of Cloverfield, I mean, at least this is what the movie wanted from you. You didn't know if John Goodman was just crazy or not. And then it just obviously shows you, yes, this is a part of Cloverfield. With the monsters and everything. So, I mean, I'm excited.
That movie too, that was so well done, with the sense of they make a Cloverfield sequel and didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously people knew.
Right.
But, you know, and that's actually covered. The Paradox one is covered in the Netflix documentary I just mentioned, Netflix versus the World, where this pundit brings up a great point about, it's later on in the documentary, but he brings up about Netflix, saying that they basically shove their shit on you. so that they can justify saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, Bright did 98 million homes.
Yeah.
So they can justify making the movie when the movie was garbage. And he brought up Cloverfield Paradox as a prime example of, he goes, that movie was garbage. Everyone who saw it was garbage. And I knew it was being made. I knew that, and this guy was in the industry, so that's why he knew. He goes, I knew it was being made. What the hell is going on up there? I'll tell you. So, you know, the funny story, I was doing, this is how we're doing our shows now. Like, just like this. Like, this is my setup for doing a show now that we are on, you know, on COVID break. So I have to do the SportsCenter updates. And he is up at the top of the stairs. It's my, like, last update. And you hear, hi, hi. And I'm like, shh. And he came down. And I'm, like, trying to get him. I'm like, dude, like, stop. And he's like, goal. He's doing his whole goal thing. I'm like, dude, stop. Like, all right, stop. Like, my update's coming up. Bob Cooney's doing a live read for, I think, FanDuel. And Bob goes, he finishes it. He's, you know, doing the whole thing. More ways to win. 21 and older, gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, hi, Jack. I went, all right. So the last update, all you hear is him in the background doing what you can probably hear now. But so anyway, the guy was saying basically that he's like, I knew that they were making a Cloverfield sequel because I had heard about it. I knew that it had been shopped around. I knew that they had done rewrites. I knew that they had started and stopped it three times. I knew that Netflix bought it. So Netflix knew that they were making that they were buying a piece of shit movie.
Mm.
And the way they justify it is putting it on the front page, shoving it in everybody's queue and everybody's eyeball. And then they can say, oh yeah, look, all these people watched it, but that doesn't mean it was good. And it kind of brought me back to what we've talked about in the past with Netflix original movies for a while were just garbage.
A while.
It doesn't mean now they've improved, but that doesn't mean they don't still have a lot of garbage, because the guy was right. All you heard about Bright from Netflix's standpoint was, look how many people watched it.
Yeah.
And everybody that watched it said, yeah, but it was trash.
Yeah.
I watched it because it was free. I have a subscription.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know how I got on that topic. I apologize. I kind of just diverted the whole show. I'll shut my mic off.
It's whatever else we want to talk about. Remember, always, always is, always has been. All right. We just got one last thing here. So, you know, the Marvel Avengers game. Yeah.
I've heard of it.
It lost a lot of money. It lost. So Square.
Oh, wait. You're talking about the video game.
Yes. The video
game. I didn't even know they made a video game.
Okay. Well, that's part of their problem they're dealing with. So Square Enix reported $48 million in losses, but I've heard upwards to $70 million in losses. So I don't know if they're just trying to save face a little bit, but it only sold 3 million copies, which is, you know, not good for, you know, how well they thought it was going to do. But this leads to my point that you can't just make something and throw the Avengers name on it and it not be fun and expect to make money. I mean, that's just like any comic book movie that bombs. Like, just because you're using these popular characters doesn't mean it's going to do well. And for me, it looked just like a hack and slash. Like, there was no real strategy to the game. It looks like I would be bored with it after 2 hours. It really does. And you didn't even hear of it.
Now, is it something that if it was on, you know, the PlayStation Network or something like that, you know, cheap, $20, you'd buy it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just out? Okay, you would. Okay,
I try.
I don't know why more video game companies do not take the carbon copy of success that we saw from Spider-Man.
Yeah,
because that game was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a, I mean, I can't think of a real negative thing about that game, and it was insanely fun. It brought you back to the first Spider-Man game way back when on the PlayStation 1.
It really did, yeah.
Nintendo 64. I mean, it was so good. And it didn't have to be because it was Spider-Man and it probably would have sold. I mean, I think COVID probably has something to do with this too. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just really reaching for an excuse for Square Enix. But yeah, man, it's you're right. You can't just put the name Avengers and it's going to do incredible. I mean, where it'll do incredible is, and this might be part of the COVID impact, is the soccer mom that is walking into a GameStop having no idea what to get her kid
mm-hmm.
for her birthday or his birthday, sees Avengers and goes, oh, he likes the Avengers.
Right.
Well, you're not having the soccer mom do that right now.
No.
Because the soccer mom is just either asking her kid or going on Amazon and, you know, getting him something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's probably playing video games too much as it is.
Yeah.
So, and once again, I'm really reaching, like I'm breaking my arm to reach for an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be an issue where you don't have some grandparents walking into stores seeing Avengers and knowing that their grandchild likes the Avengers. Okay, I'll buy this video game for him.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean that Spider-Man game was probably going to do pretty well anyway.
Yeah.
And
it killed it. It was game of the year.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the new one. Mm-hmm. Probably not going to buy it because I can't wait for it, but I'm probably not going to buy it because I have so many video games I haven't even touched.
Yeah,
like, way too many. Yeah. And then the PS5 is coming out soon, and I don't think I'm going to be able to transfer games over to the PS5. So, yeah.
When are you getting that?
I don't know. I mean, COVID's really, really hit me in the wallet. I've like depleted my savings because I'm not getting paid as much. Normally around this time, I am selling, you know, Sixers tickets as a way of income.
Yeah.
And I'm doing Flyers games, which I get paid more to do. And right now it's literally, and I'm doing Quizzo.
Yeah.
And right now it is the one-time payment from YouTube a month, which is great and much needed. And then it's work, but the work isn't what I'm used to. So, and then on top of it, you know, we've had hockey and the problems here with hockey. It's a good thing that you didn't play because pretty much every team I play on has taken less guys, which means the price goes up.
Oh no.
So, it's like mail-in ballots. It all hits at once.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the leagues start back up at once. And next thing you know, it's like, I got to pay for 15 hockey teams and the price went up for all of them. So, and then I got hit with a bunch of tickets that I had to pay for. I forgot that the Roosevelt Boulevard now had speed cameras.
Oh no, they do. I didn't know that.
You know, and I watched a few Fast and the Furious movies.
Got you in the mood.
Got a bill in the mail from the Philadelphia police for $100. I was going 56 and a 40. So for all you females out there that like Bad Boys, hit me up. What's up with it? 56 and a 40. Don't know if you can do math, but that is 16 miles per hour over
the limit.
So pretty intense, you know. Baby driver who?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that could have come at a worse time. Like, I got that bill and I was like, Jesus Christ. So I had to pay like $500 like in tickets that I was fighting and just finally gave up. So so to answer your question a long way, I have no money.
Yeah.
I'm broke. So not for a while.
Yeah, I'm not getting it for a while either. I'm gonna wait a little bit. Usually they drop a little bit if you can hold off 6 months to a year, especially if you don't get the first run and you're looking on eBay, forget about it, man. Forget about it.
Well, also, I mean, you know, look, I would like it. Don't get me wrong. The only game system I ever got on release was the PS4.
Okay.
And I got that at a discount, which is one of the reasons why I got it. I got that for like half off.
Nice.
And yeah, it was cool. I got it at half off. I mean, I had gift certificates and whatnot. So I rolled in there and they gave me a bill of like $400. And I said, actually, sir, that will be half that. Yeah. One gift certificate, two gift certificates, three gift certificates. So here's a coupon. So I would obviously like it, but right now, I mean, I also have, as I said, I have games that I haven't even touched that I want to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I told you this and the listeners before, the Assassin's Creed French Revolution game that has literally sat on my shelf for, I think, 3 or 4 years now.
Oh, boy.
And it's not like I don't want to play it. It's, I know that it will take over and consume everything if I start it.
Absolutely.
And that's a problem. So, it's just right now, I don't really need the PS4.
The PS5. Yeah.
Or PS5. Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time, my PS4 is old as shit. So, and slow. And
yeah,
it's probably just like so chock full of dust.
Yeah.
I really need to like take it to a computer place and
blow it out.
And have them clean it up, because it's just I can tell. I mean, I've had it since literally since the PS4 dropped. I've never once opened it, never once cleaned it, and it's got to be so. I opened up my my Dyson fan.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I cleaned that out. Yeah. And that was after about 3 years. Uh-huh. And that was so gross.
I know.
I mean, this thing had so much dust and dirt and grime in it. And that it took me an hour to clean it out. It took me forever. So I can only imagine how gross and disgusting this PS4 is. So yeah, I mean, I probably just got to clean it out and see if I can.
Well,
I don't know.
Brighter days are ahead of us. The vaccine is coming, and we'll
back to normal. I'll hold my breath on that.
Yeah, me too.
Holding my breath.
All right, Pat. Well, it was fucking great hearing from you, dude.
So, yeah, no, fuck off.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, thank you.